Welcome back to Speaking of Happy. I am Eli Rigatuso, and you are listening on Radio Omaha. We're back for another episode of the show. I'm going to start this show a little differently because I have realized that in my quest to have people be more aware of pronouns, I'm going to start introducing myself as Eli Rigatuso, and that my pronouns, I prefer he and him, because I would like for the world to actually start doing that so people can just understand and be respectful. So we're going to start training people, and we're going to start training people with this very first show here. Like my previous shows, I didn't do this. I did have a conversation with some people from UNO, Gender and Sexuality Resource Center Group, and we had a lovely conversation about pronouns. My guest today, I thought this would be a great show to start this particular tradition. The tradition of introducing yourself and your preferred pronouns, or I should say your pronouns, because they're not a preference. It's just what it is. And I am Eli, and it is he and him. And welcome to the show. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Eris Kolzar, and my pronouns are she, her.
Eris, I'm so happy to have you here today because our paths have crossed a couple of different times in a couple of different situations. You were at Mama's Girls, and you shared some really incredibly cool stuff about yourself and your life. Your story is somewhat similar to mine in that we've both experienced being born in the wrong body, correct?
Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing. People don't realize how much of a thing. It's like more of a thing than people think.
More of a thing than I want to think about some days, but.
Yeah, I get that. The reason why I wanted you on the show is you did talk about how you're a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And I've listened to some of your music. I love the electronic stuff that you do. I'm not really a big fan of instrumental electronic. It's good, but it's not something that I would typically listen to. I liked the one, though, where the words were just more of sounds.
Oh, yeah. That's actually an instrument, oddly enough.
It is.
Yeah, it's not even me. Although the voice sounds strangely like me.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Well, first of all, tell me the song. I'm going to pull this thing up on the computer here so we can look at it. Nobody else can see it but us. But
yeah. So it's called Manosphere Ouroboros, which is... I read this post on Twitter about... the weird world of like MRAs and then also men's rights activists, and then there's a subsegment of that they kind of fight with or doesn't even identify as an MRA sometimes, but these people who have essentially sworn off women altogether from their lives. Sometimes they have similar and different.
Are these men who are
men, and I forget what they're called, honestly. I'm blanking on that right now, but it just really, somebody said that, like, I don't know, that men are kind of like eating themselves right now. I don't know, it's just like the men's rights activists, like, were even eating themselves within their own groups. Like they couldn't even, like, these people who had seemingly like get along in so many ways, like, were still so far removed from being able to agree even on the things that they supposedly had in common.
Okay.
And so I just, like, it just, I don't know, it was such a weird phenomenon to me. And so it just made me think of, like, an Ouroboros, which is a snake eating its own tail. And it's like, that's what was happening in this manosphere, in this, like, men's rights activist world, was that there was, like, a unending cycle of not even being able to come to grips with that weird subsect identity.
Well, that is...
yeah. I don't know that it has honestly anything to do with the song because it's just a bunch of music, but...
But it's really actually quite fantastic. I mean, I would have never known that there was all of that interesting story behind it. And this is one of the reasons why I love to interview people, especially musicians, who are willing to express what it is that helped them create what they have. So, like, that's a very interesting story. I love that. And I love that particular piece.
It's like, of the more musical of the pieces that I have on the site, it's my favorite.
Well, tell me something. How did you get started in with music?
Boy, I think I got started with music with my father. He directed music in our early church, and I mean, which was just going up there and kind of waving his hands around somewhat knowingly. He always sang, and my mom sang, and like when I was, there's a video of me at age 2 directing my own happy birthday, and like I just always I don't know, as soon as I could do music, I was doing music with everything in choir, band as soon as I could. My mom started teaching herself the piano, and I started teaching myself the piano from her books that she bought. My dad always tells a story about taking a shower and hearing piano music and coming out and looking for my mom and going, "No, where is she?" And I was like, "I don't know, she's gone." And he's like, "Oh, who's playing?" And I was like, "That's me." And I had, like, passed my mom already by this point in her lessons. So I guess I started taking lessons at that point.
Wow. How old were you?
I mean, this was, like, sixth grade or something like that. And wow. Then I took 6 years of classical piano, picked up the guitar along the way, started writing my own music, was in a band in high school for a while. Well, pretty much the whole thing. Went to college and did music there. Was going to major in contemporary Christian music at this college. It's a small liberal arts college called Greenville College in Greenville, Illinois. It's like an hour east of St. Louis. Took about all the music courses I could there. Then went, I love music and I will use this for the rest of my life in some fashion or another, but I don't want a degree in it. And so changed my major after that. Was undecided for a while, but I was in bands there. I played a music festival with a band that was from my freshman year. This is a ska band. We won a battle of the bands to play the main stage of that festival. So I've had a weird long relationship with music.
Well, and what was the name of that band?
That was a Name in Danger, a very short-lived band, but it was a lot of fun.
So you were raised in a very Christian household.
Oh, very, yeah, fundamentally so.
Okay. So can we step back? When would you say you realized that you were transgender?
That didn't, like, ever come to the forefront of my attention, like, as a conscious thought until I was about 22.
So tell me what life was like prior to that for you. Just
it was normal for me, but I don't know what normal is for. I identified male that whole time, so, you know, in a sense I identified cis, but I've never been cis. You can get the privilege and you can get everything else, but all that stuff was, like, always there. It was very buried for me for a long time. I think a lot had to do with just there was no space for it. There was no space in my parents' views on things and religion, and I mean, we didn't even think gay people were right and stuff. So I mean, there was just, I mean, the term didn't even enter my vocabulary. It wasn't talked about even in the Christian college I went to, which was more liberal than a lot of other Christian colleges. Like, I mean, we didn't really talk about that stuff. It was really off my radar in a lot of ways. It was a lot repressed. I mean, looking back, there are instances now where I'm like, woo, this thing that, like, I didn't really know what to do with and stuck in my mind for a long time makes a whole lot more sense now. But I, at the time, had no idea.
Can you give me an example of what one of those things was for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can remember the very first time I ever heard about a trans person. It was on the news and it was about somebody had a sex change. And, like, I can, like, almost re-inhabit that moment. Like, that's how vivid that of a memory that is for me. And I was, you know, that's a small example, but, like, that's something where it's like, you know, I don't know that every person would have such a vivid memory, you know, and it, like, affected me and, like, it stirred something in me, and I didn't know what that was, and I had no way to process it whatsoever, but it was there. And looking back, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes a lot more sense now.
Well, and I can totally relate to that, because I find it difficult sometimes with people not understanding, and they're like, well, because I'm 50, I turned 50 last year, and it wasn't until last year, as a matter of fact, it was just, what, maybe a month and a half, 2 months after my birthday that I, or maybe it was just before. Yes, I think it was just before that I watched the Jenner interview, and I just had so many, like, all of a sudden, it was just like, all of this stuff was back here in my unconscious mind, but everything just finally snapped into focus.
Yeah.
And then I had a series of, like, recollections of things, like you just described, that were so vivid, and I started writing like I had never been able to write before about some experiences that I'd had when I was younger, and realizing that I had fought with my mom ever since I was really little. I mean, my mom was so ingrained in, you know, I have a son and three daughters, and she dressed all three of us girls alike, and we all had long hair and the ponytail and the dresses and the whole, and I used to argue and fight with her about it all the time.
said I never held anything worth $5,000 before, but he handed it to me with his American Express, and I tried to maintain my nervous, wet grip, worrying cousin space. So hard to find things, but when we landed, I tried to stop time so I could get myself fast food. But it was already in my hands, and I already took some bites and time. Time doesn't stop, you just turn invisible. But you always leave footprints when you're walking in the snow, and you bump into some invisible friend that you know when you fall in the snow, and she falls on you looking up from the cold ground. You see her, but you both know her brother's just around the corner. So you'll leave just as cold as you came, but you stare at her eyes just the same. A caress that will never remain, a sister rusty replay in your brain. And love doesn't stop, it just turns invisible.
Welcome back to Speaking of Happy. We had a little bit of a funky snafu there after the first segment of the show, and it ended a little abruptly. I was just sharing about being raised with a mother who was very much, you know, she was in the gender binary and had forced us girls to be as feminine as possible, and you know, I was even raised to believe that, you know, like I couldn't be anything but that. And for the longest time I considered myself, because people said, you know, you're really feminine, and even now I think as I continue to transition, I think I'm always going to present more female than male, more feminine. But who gets to say whether or not that makes me any more or less of a man?
No,
you know.
Yeah, that's...
And so it's just kind of one of those things that I think is really interesting in like breaking up and shattering that gender binary so people are more open to the fluidity of gender.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that you, because I noticed, I pulled an old video up, found an old video from Jake and the something or other.
Yeah.
And you were performing. You were playing your accordion.
Mm-hmm.
And you had long hair and a mustache and a beard,
mm-hmm.
and you were wearing tights and a white dress.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, was there a statement being made there? Were you identifying as female there, or were you more playing with your gender and gender roles?
I mean, I don't think there was any more statement being made than anybody makes a statement when they express their gender. I think that for me, it was, I mean, it totally was me figuring out where I was. There was a long period of limbo in my life, had to do with how I came about understanding myself as trans in the very beginning. I got onto a forum, Laura's Playground, and I think it's still probably around. And at the time, the policing and the sort of gatekeeping of gender and sex was very much internalized by most trans people. And so they became sort of secondary gatekeepers of all of that stuff. And so the message that I got when I went on and was reading a bunch of forum posts was a bunch of people going, I don't know if I'm trans. And then the people who like do identify as trans and had been out in transition were all going, well, you don't know, and go see a gender therapist so they can tell you whether or not you are trans. Don't go any farther than you're comfortable, because it's much harder to go back, like physically transitioning. That sort of put like a weird fear of God in me about things. I literally went to my gender therapist, who I absolutely adore, saw for 7 years, mostly didn't talk about gender.
That's a little irony there.
Right. It was totally worth it. Yeah. Best decision of my entire life, yeah. Hands down.
Well, I think everybody should go to therapy at some point or another and just talk about things that are happening in their lives.
Yeah.
And feelings that they're experiencing that they're maybe not willing to share with anyone else.
So, yeah. So I went there for like 3 years before I finally confronted her. And I was like, so when are you going to tell me whether I'm trans or not. Like, when are you going to give me this, like, certificate? Da, 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 you are trans. And she just looked at me and she said, I'm never going to do that. That's not my role. It's not my job to tell you who you are. I believe you when you tell me who you are. And I'm here to explore things if you have questions with you and to be curious with you. But
I love
never.
Her. Who is she?
Megan Smith. She's okay. Yeah. She's amazing.
I need to get her in here and interview
oh
her.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
She's the most wonderful person. And so
for those of you who are listening and maybe looking for a therapist, I know that she is pretty busy, but she would be a good one to.
Oh man, if you can get in with her.
Yeah.
It's
or Amanda Duffy Randall. I interviewed her and she actually is my therapist.
Nice.
And she's really quite along the same lines.
So after that, I still had a lot of that, like, fear. And I had a lot of going to therapy, sort of bringing up things where it's like, oh, I've sort of, like, deceived myself about this thing that has nothing to do with gender. Like, just, I didn't feel like I could really trust myself and my feelings for a really long time, like, period of 5 or so years. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to just kind of be like, this feeling is still here. I've resolved a lot of issues that I've had in therapy, although some are definitely still not resolved and maybe never will be. And I don't think that this is like me masquerading as a problem that I'm trying to cover up by being trans or something like that. And so there was kind of a turning point a few years ago. I would have started my transition like 3 Octobers ago if the doctor in Planned Parenthood hadn't moved to Texas after I had made my appointment. But there was a point around that time where I had read a piece by a trans woman who was writing about their experience of sex before and after transition. And one of the things that they had mentioned was that they now feel sexy. And I read that and something in my mind just exploded and went, you have never felt sexy ever. And I was just like, wow, I haven't. And that's a thing that you can do that exists. Like, you can feel that you're like attractive or that you're sexy. Like, this is something that I've just completely blocked out of my purview. Like, it was so shut off because there was dysphoria underneath that. There was discomfort with who I was and my body and how I presented and, you know, how my body felt and to me. And so that idea of feeling attractive or being sexy was so far cut off from me. Mm. I didn't even think it was something that people could do or have. Like, I just shut out any message like that from everything and everywhere. That was a really big turning point for me where I was like, wow, okay, I've already come to terms with that. I have a feminine side. I like expressing feminine, but now I need to do something about, like, I think that this needs to go farther. Mm-hmm. So to go back to your original question, for about 5 or so years, maybe, I presented feminine gender expression, but identified male. Mm. And so I was trans without being, and some people don't like this word, but transsexual. I was transgender, where my gender didn't match my assigned gender role and gender expectations, you know, from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I still feel that way. So I was more, I don't know, I had lots of different words to describe myself, but less.
How was it in that world of being a musician and being out in and performing and expressing yourself in the way that you did? How was that received by the public?
I mean, we weren't like a famous band or anything. No, so it's we went on tour. I mean, we did a tour, like 6 states or so one summer, and I was feminine presenting that time, but I don't think I had a beard at that time, but I still, like, on my register, my voice and everything was down low. I still identified as my old dead name and old pronouns and everything like that. And I don't know, I was kind of used to me like that, you know, at that point. And my best friend was very supportive of me, Jake, who's in the band, and I think just being around him made me more comfortable to just be myself. And I really just had this streak, and I've always had kind of an iconoclast streak where I've almost felt more comfortable not fitting in than fitting in sometimes.
Yeah.
So I guess in some ways I was used to it, but I don't know. I never got like a ton of harassment, playing as a musician or anything like that. I mean, I would get like comments and things and have to deal with that. But for the most part, people weren't terrible.
Right. Well,
which was
not
great.
It is great. At least not to your face.
At least not to my face.
And that's the part, you know, it's so crazy because the way that you explain your process is really very similar to mine. It just took a lot longer. It's unfortunate that more people aren't given the freedom to actually just explore gender and explore what it really means to them and for them. And because they like, you know, it's like you get the stamp mm-hmm. and then you just go.
Yeah.
And for those of us who fit outside of the stamp, it can be incredibly difficult to get to this place that you talk about, which is to be more accepting and just more willing to look at yourself in ways that you weren't allowing yourself to be before.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't any freedom or peace there, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Well, the stamp is kind of invisible. I mean, until somebody points it out, it can be very invisible. So.
It can. Look at that. Oh, my gosh. See, we're going to be here all night. We are going to be talking forever. This is going to be the longest episode of Speaking of Happy ever. Because this is second segment. We're already done with the second segment. So we're going to be right back. We're going to play some music. We will be right back with more from Eris after this.
Down by the hard view of progress in its action, 'cause life is like a process and you never see the end result. Get up, go to classes, come back to your room spent to fall back asleep and then do it all again.
Welcome back to Speaking of Happy. I am still here on Radio Omaha. I am Eli Rigatuso, and Eris is still with me. And we're just having such a lovely conversation. I could really sit and listen to you share your story forever. And you said
don't
that
tempt me.
You said that there was so much more that you could say and that you've been kind of reining yourself in. Well, I'm telling you to let yourself free. Set yourself free. So tell me, you know, when you did get to the point when you realized, okay, this is really what's going on. Mm-hmm. You did share with me before that you told your parents.
Yeah.
And that did not go over so well.
No.
Because you're actually, it's one thing, I think, to come out to parents who aren't wrapped up in a religious package. Mm-hmm. It's another to come out to parents who are.
Yeah.
And even just being lesbian or gay, like you had said earlier, I mean, even that was a big whoa.
You know,
let alone coming to your parents and saying, oh, by the way,
you have a daughter.
Yeah.
Right.
So tell me, can you walk me through that a little bit?
Yeah. I can tell you, actually, I had two experiences coming out to my parents. So I got to come out twice. Twice as much fun.
Yes.
Fun, very much in
me
quotation
too.
Marks.
Me too, except for the second time I came out to my mom, she's now suffering from dementia. So it went really well the second time.
Okay. So the first time was, I had moved to Omaha and I hadn't seen my parents. Like, my parents have only ever visited me twice in the almost 9 years I've lived here.
Wow.
They live in Indiana and they would, you know, generously buy me a plane ticket back for Christmas. And that's about when I would see them, like once or so a year. We don't have like a super close relationship. My parents would say that they very much love me and very much care about me. But
prior to your transition, you didn't even really have a...
Yeah. So they don't... The thing is, like, my parents love me, but they don't know what it's like to kind of have emotional intimacy within their lives. And so I really was trying to work through that with them even before I came out. And so they did surprise me 1 year. Not in regards to the intimacy part, but my car had broken down and I decided that I was just going to bike. Well, they decided that they were just going to buy me a car without telling me or asking me or any of those things. So they said, hey, we bought you this car. We're going to drive it to you. It'll be like a couple weeks. And I was planning on telling them about all my transgender stuff at the time, still identifying male, but presenting female or feminine, at least. And this really kind of fast forwarded my schedule more than I was expecting. So they came and I told them over the phone and I was like, hey, I want you guys to know this stuff and I want to give you some time to kind of process it because you're going to be here. There's no going back. I don't have an old wardrobe anymore. I've just got what I got. Mm. And so you're going to get to see me like you're going to see me. So my parents came and they were confused a lot.
Yeah.
And I really tried to walk through all of the questions that they had. At the end of the day, it's something that they would kind of rather just sweep under the rug, especially then, because in some ways they just didn't have to deal with it.
Right.
And so that's rough because it's not being seen for who you are. And right. I mean, if somebody doesn't see you, they can't really even love you. Like, because who do they love then?
Right.
And this was a big part of me now. I would go home and, you know, like, it wasn't a huge divisive issue, but my parents would never talk about it. They would never tell me their feelings about it or anything. I remember asking my mom to, like, iron my dress, and she did. And, like, I would humor them sometimes and go to church to see people or to just... because it was important to them. And, you know, even though they knew I didn't believe that way anymore, I wanted to offer something to them. Right. But I would go in my nice Sunday dress or whatever. And that was always an interesting experience going to church. I haven't been back home since I have come out the second time. So the second time I now had a new name and new pronouns to go by and, you know, a new identity as their daughter. If they were to accept me, they just didn't. They just couldn't. My dad wouldn't even use my new name while we were talking. And I asked him in the middle of it and I was like, Dad, please call me Eris. And he said, well, I will call you that, but only in public. In private, you are always still my son, and I will call you, you know, my dad name.
Wow.
So that was something.
There's something that I don't think people get about how hurtful that is. And can you explain or try to express what it is like? You know, because it's interesting that he's going to, okay, out here I'm going to call you heiress, but in my home, between you and me, you are not that.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, you know, what that brings up for you?
For me, it's really just a complete negation and of my identity, and also taking away my ability to self-identify. And there's a level of just not believing someone and not letting them tell you who they are. And that's part of like getting to know people. It's part of loving people, is letting people tell you who they are and seeing that and affirming that and loving them for it, good or bad things. And this is neither. It's not good. It's not bad. It just is. It's core to my understanding of who I am and how I operate in the world. It's a pretty big and central part of my life. You don't kind of realize how much your sex and your gender matter to you until they really feel wrong, and until you really just don't feel right in your own skin, until you don't fit the mold that has been put on for you. And I think everyone can relate to that in some way or another, that they've been at some point in some time cast into a role they did not feel was legitimate for them and did not express who they are. Some of them may be more core or less core to their identity than gender and sex. I had a conversation with my mother recently where I was just checking in with her, because she's more, I feel like she's more willing if one of my parents would be to accept me for who I am.
Right.
I just checked in with her and was like, I just want to know if I can be your daughter yet, and where you are with all of that. And she's like, I just don't understand why we can't just not talk about this and not relate about this. And you can't just, you know, we can't just have a relationship. And so I tried to relate it to her in the way that in the best way I could. And so I said, well, Mom, imagine, she's a Christian. It's a very big part of her identity. I said, imagine if you had a friend or someone you knew, and every time that they saw you, they told you, you're not a Christian. And actually, I know better than you that you are not a Christian. Like, I know you can tell me that you're one, but actually you're wrong. And I know better. And you're not one. At every corner, like
every
that was
turn around. They right. Said that. Yep.
Right. That was like a part of all your interactions with them. Like, would you want to be around that person? You know, would you want to have that relationship? And she said, no, probably not. And I think that's one of the first times that I kind of ever got through on a way that she could more relate to, where it's like, no, yeah, if you don't use, even if you do use my pronouns and my new name, but underneath it all, I know, and we've talked about that, you don't accept that. You don't accept me as your daughter and as a woman, then I mean, all that's just fake. It's just, it's a farce. And and when I hear it, all I'm going to think about is that you can't see me and that you don't know me and that you won't look at me. You like refuse to look at me and really see your child. Mm-hmm. So I think that's
incredible. Yeah. And it's a very powerful correlation, and particularly for someone who is very religious and feels that that is a part of her identity. It makes perfect sense to use that correlation. And I'm glad that you had that moment of maybe a little bit of insight. Might take her a little longer, I don't know. But it's kind of interesting because, you know, you're willing to partake in going to church and celebrating their Christian celebrations and doing what it is that they want to do, because you understand that that's part of their identity. It's not something you personally partake in now, but it's about respect. Mm-hmm. You can at least respect and appreciate, because you were raised in that home, you can respect and appreciate where they're coming from. And so it's unfortunate that that same thing cannot be extended to you. And we see that a lot in our world. I mean, we just see that a lot in the world. I've always thought about this. It just seems like people walk around with this like sphere around them. And it's like maybe extends about 2 or possibly even 3 feet around their body. And anything outside of that 3 feet means nothing. Hmm. All that matters is what's happening inside that sphere. And I think that that is the problem, why it's so difficult sometimes for people when they say things to me like, you need to be patient, you need to do this, and you need to do that. And it's like, no, I don't need to do anything. And don't tell me that I'm being impatient when you're the one who's being impatient. Because all I did was very gently say, my pronouns are he and him, after you misgendered me.
Yeah.
And then I have somebody who just goes ballistic on me because, well, you need to give me a break and you need to be patient. And this is new for me. And this is, well, well, you know what? For 50 damn years,
yeah,
I was something that I wasn't.
Yeah.
So that you could be comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is three parts of a wonderful interview, and we are going to take another break. And then we're going to be back, and we're going to do another segment of the show because we're just having a wonderful conversation. But I do really believe that this is going to have to be another. We're going to have to do multiple interviews with you, Aris. I love listening to you talk and the way that you describe things, and it's very palpable. Like, it's understandable, but it's coming from a very genuine place.
Thank you.
So thank you for being here and joining us on Speaking of Happy. We're going to go and play a couple of songs. We'll be right back after this. are back with the last part of this interview with Eris. And I've decided over the break that we're going to meet again.
I hope so.
Well, and, you know, in more ways than one, we'll meet again. But we are going to have multiple interviews, I feel, with Eris, because I do really genuinely appreciate the way that you describe your experiences and share your story. And we've just really, you know, scratched the surface, I think, of some really important pieces of what this transition journey can look like for someone. And so I'm, you know, definitely going to have you come back and we'll do a part two.
Sounds good.
Before we went into the break, we were talking about your mom, and you had, you felt as though you had a little moment of understanding from her.
Yeah.
And you described how you related it to her being a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and that that's part of her identity and that you drew that line for her. You did mention to me before that you have two siblings. Can you tell me a little bit about how they have been about all of this?
Yeah. So I have two older brothers, 8 and 9 years older than I am, significantly older. I came out to my oldest brother first, and it was interesting because they're best friends and worst enemies, and they've always been that way.
The two of them?
The two of them.
With each other?
With each other.
Okay.
And so my oldest brother, Dan, told me, don't tell Doug. Don't tell Doug. He won't understand. And so I kind of internalized that for a while, but then I eventually did tell him, and he was super understanding. And I mean, it was... It's just, and then I just kind of had to laugh and go, okay, I see what this is.
And then did Doug go, don't tell Dan? Because he'll
No, I told him that he already knew, so he knew. But no, it's been still a little bit of a learning journey for them, but they've been really supportive, especially since I came out last year, like for the second time.
Now you say that, you say you came out twice. Is that, what was your first coming out?
Well, the first coming out was just coming out as transgender. Like I am still male and go by my birth name and all that stuff, but like if you see me, like I'm gonna look different than I did before, and like I'm gonna be, I have a new gender expression and gender identity. And so I came out with that first.
Okay.
And then it was the like, okay, well, the sex piece is also changing with that, that like how I feel about my body and how I want to be addressed, it is changing as well. So I had that coming out.
Okay.
So then, especially after the second one, learning that my parents didn't really take it that well. My brothers have went to bat for me without me asking for them with my parents when they've seen them, because they do all live in Indiana and I don't. And so I remember one of my brothers telling me that they basically had a conversation with my parents that went, don't be stupid. Don't lose your child. Love them. Like, don't let this get in the way.
Right.
I really think that if anything is going to get them there, probably at the end of the day, that's going to be it.
Your brothers.
Well, my brothers and that fact alone, like, don't lose me. Because I did after I came out and I realized that they were not going to accept me for who I was. I didn't kind of realize that until my birthday, which is sad. They called me on my birthday and I told them, if you're willing to call me by my name and my pronouns, we can have this conversation. If not, put the other parent on the line. And if they are willing to do so, we can have that conversation. And they agreed to it. And I don't think they ever gendered me at all during the conversation, but we talked a little bit. But I went home to a birthday card and a birthday letter from my parents, and I got happy birthday. I got to, you know, to my dearest son from my father. I got a letter from my mother about how she named me and all of these things, and it was so important to her, and how that's why she doesn't believe that I am who I say that I am, and all of these things. And so, like, I got this face saving, we will accept you so we can have this conversation from them when I called them. And then I went home and I saw what they really thought, and that was hard.
Yeah.
It was the first time that I've ever really cared about birthday cards. I texted all my friends and I went, so I kind of received a shitty birthday card, and I really don't want this to be the only birthday card I got this year.
Aww.
Because that's the association I'm going to have with birthday cards from now on, if it is. I know they're dumb, kind of, but can I get some birthday cards this year? And I just got like so many wonderful birthday cards.
Aww,
and it was such a great outpouring. I have really, really supportive friends.
Yeah.
And so that's when I kind of realized.
Well, if I'd have known you back then, I would have bought you a birthday card.
Oh, thank
immediately.
You.
Immediately.
So that's when I kind of realized, like, this was not changing for them. And so at that point, I kind of just told them, I was like, look, until further notice, I am cutting off contact with you.
Here's something. I'm going to interject something that, that just struck me as you were talking about your mom and how she said, I named you and I know. It's like, but you know, you named me before you even knew me. They probably, like, I don't know how old your parents are. Now they're in their 50s or
60s. Yeah.
Okay, so they're in their 60s. So my mom is... She just turned 70 last year, so they're about the same age as my mom. So they were older than when they had you, because you're in your 20s, right?
Yeah, going to be 30 in a week.
Ooh, wow. So your birthday, you're going to have to give me your address so I can send you a birthday card. but I just find it very interesting. Did your mom know you were going to be a boy before she had you?
No, actually, no. They had, or well, I know that my mom had a girl name picked out, too. Because she told me at one point, I don't remember why or if I asked or something.
Well, see, and that's very interesting because it's like, you know, well, you had to have gone through some sort of a process to come up with that name, too.
Yeah.
You know, just it's so I just find it really interesting the things that people would tend to hang on to.
Oh, it's coming back to me now. The reason that she said this is because, no, she didn't know and they had me and I didn't have a name for like 3 days.
Oh.
And so it was this big process and this thing. And so that's why she was so certain that I was what she thinks that I am.
But still, isn't it interesting how it's like, once again, it's inside her sphere.
Yeah.
It has absolutely nothing to do with you. It's inside her sphere, not yours.
Well, another thing that I kind of tried to relate to her about it was like, okay, so imagine how ridiculous it would sound if I told you that you don't actually like chocolate. Like, how absurd would that sound?
Right.
You know, telling someone what experience of their own body that they're having or not. And so then, like, you're doing that same thing with me where it's like, no, I how much more personal is my own experience of my own sex and my own body?
You don't like green. You know, you don't like green. I know you and you don't like green. It's the same thing.
Right. It's just a denial of somebody's ability to self-identify, to tell you how they're feeling, and to just listen to that with an openness. And it's really hard. Like, I don't understand it. Kind of given up. It feels very moot to me. I mean, I don't care if 1,000 years from now they have all of, like, trans stuff explained and it's this much biological or it's this much social or... I don't care. I don't care at all. Because to me, at the end of the day, I have an experience of what it's like to be me, and I have had an 28 some years of an experience that was not fun and not comfortable and not aligned with who I feel like I am. And I'm starting to finally have an experience of what it's like to feel comfortable and to feel good about who I am. And that's really, at the end of the day, all I can do and all I can go off of. And so it doesn't matter, like, what it is, why I like chocolate or why I feel like a woman. But that's just it.
Right. Exactly. It's almost like, why do people have to say, I don't understand? Well, I don't care if you don't understand, because it doesn't matter whether or not you understand me. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It's a hard thing. It's a hard thing for people to do. And I think there's always a desire to understand. But what's underneath that, I feel like, at the end of the day, is that if they can understand, then they can legitimize you. Like, then their understanding of it can say, okay, well, now that I understand, I can make a judgment call on the thing that you're experiencing. But if they can't understand, then how are they supposed to make that judgment call? Where I would rather people come from on this or anything that they have to deal with in this realm is, like, take people at their word.
Yeah.
If you don't understand, that's okay.
But just accept.
Yeah.
Just accept and love and care and know that it's okay not to understand.
Yeah.
So your brothers have been pretty cool about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're supportive.
Yes.
And look at that. This is part 4 of what was supposed to be a 3-part interview. But we're going to come back. We're going to come back. So this is the first part of numerous episodes of Heiress.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to be like a rash you can't get rid of.
You're going to be your own world of podcast because we have so much more to talk about. I mean, we covered some really important things, and I thank you for being incredibly generous and sharing as much as you did in regard to your family and you know, what's personal to you about yourself and how you identify and who you are. And I just think that there are a lot of people that are listening today that learned something. And that's what I think is important.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. So we're going to be back. This is it for today's episode of Speaking of Happy, but we are going to have more with Eris again in the very near future. So, you know, we'll just keep teasing you with that. That'll keep people coming back, I'm sure. You are listening to Speaking of Happy on Radio Omaha. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you again later.
Oh.